everyone but me. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And my producers found out yesterday, looking at Alexa.com, that out of the 150 million websites in the world, the Vinnie Eastwood Show has only been around for less than 2 years, and it's now in the top 1% of websites in the entire world. Okay, so I'm doing not bad. Hopefully, maybe it'll get better. Maybe it won't. Maybe people will just go, you know what, Vinny's getting too big. He must have sold out to the New World Order. He must be his own shill. I'm pretty sure that'll happen. Okay, today we were hoping to have a guest called The Greek call in. So if The Greek is listening, the phone lines are open for you, mate, and you can call right on in any old time you please. In the meantime, I was going to talk about the New Zealand situation with regards to these asset sales and the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, because I think this is actually probably one of the most scary things that is happening to the country right now, is that you have these New World Order trash, working for the banking interviews, working for the banking cartels and what have you, that come in and get elected, and nobody's ever really heard of them. Like I'd never heard of Mitt Romney before him starting to run for the Republican candidate nomination and everything like that. Never heard of Obama before he came in and started running for president and all of that sort of stuff. All right? It's just like these people kind of almost come out of nowhere. Like, their background is completely unknown to any of us because we don't actually get involved. Right? You know, we're not at politics every day. We don't go to Congress. We don't protest outside a lot of the time. And even if we do, we're not naming names, shaming shames, and what have you. So basically, these scum fracks get away with it because we don't know who we're dealing with. And if you don't know who your enemy is, how exactly are you going to fight them? If you don't know what their tactics are, how exactly are you going to defeat them? So dig this. Here's the tactic of the enemy. Manipulate people with the media to tell them that there's a big economic crisis. Then when they react to that big economic crisis, they will willingly get anybody who says that they can save them into power. Okay? That's how easy it is to manipulate our society. Most people don't think about anything at all, at any point. I forget who it was. It might have been Winston Churchill who said the best argument against democracy is a conversation with the average voter. And I hold that to be 100% true because I have talked to many average voters and they don't know Shiite Muslim about anything. They can't define anything. It's the thing. You go to ask them, define right wing, define left wing. They can't do it. Define economics. They can't do it. So you have a whole bunch of completely uneducated, manipulated, totally brainwashed, mind-controlled slaves who are willing to destroy their own country for no good reason. Okay? And it's just the thing. They're completely unaware. This lack of awareness, wholesale, doesn't matter what country you're in, we all experience this massive lack of awareness. Do we not? And it's not my fault that everybody's not aware. It's not your fault. We're the ones going out there trying to tell the truth. It's not our fault when they don't listen to us either. It's not our fault when our countries get sold out. It's not our fault. It's not our problem either. We're not the ones who created it. We shouldn't be the ones who have sole responsibility of solving it. And more to the point, solving such a massive problem, let's say if I did take responsibility for saying, oh, hold on a second, the whole country's fracked. I have to do something. Okay? Many activists do this, and they find out very early on that it's not easy to do it on your own. If anything, it's nigh on impossible. That's another thing that I found out about all the activists in New Zealand. Okay? Whenever any of them are in trouble, they always know other activists within their movement or in other areas or something like that, and they always come out of the woodwork to protect each other. Okay, we really do have a an opposite mechanism starting to work here in the truth movement. Okay, and let me just sort of try and break it down. So, media, assets, government, social. Okay, these are the three things that I think probably really need to be defined for people in the truth movement. Media, assets, social. Media, currently manipulate everybody by telling them lies and whatever. Okay, cool. Who do they get to do all the commentary? They get paid shills and what have you. Okay, so what does the truth movement have to do? Get unpaid shills. All right. I'm a shill, in some way, sense of the word. I am shilling the truth all day long. I'm shilling counselling and truth of ideology and what have you. So technically, yes, I am, okay? Except I'm doing the exact opposite of what the current media do, right? And that's all that needs to happen. You just have a look at whatever the establishment's doing, do the direct opposite, and you're most likely going to be right on the money, okay? It's pretty simple. Do the direct opposite of whatever they want you to do. Assets. They want you to sell your assets, ergo, you have to keep your assets. Pretty straightforward. They want you to sign massive trade agreements, which take away your country's sovereignty and give evil companies like Monsanto the capacity to sue your company if they pass legislation stopping anything that would make them a profit. For instance, if they wanted to come and dump toxic waste in the middle of Queen Street, for example, main city. And the government said, you know what? Dumping toxic waste in the middle of our main shopping areas is going to cause a lot of damage to the local population, and it might dampen the local businesses and everything like that. So we're going to pass legislation that makes it illegal to dump toxic waste in public places. Monsanto will go, you know what? We're going to have to take you to court then. Because you're threatening our fracking profit margins. And I'm not kidding. I'm making a really insane example to just kind of show you exactly what they are capable of doing. If they wanted to, they could do this under this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. And if you're in the United States or in Japan or anything like that, any massive scum fracker corporation will be capable of doing this to you as well. We are all going to be exterminated in terms of economics by this type of treaty. Now, the United States has already suffered under NAFTA and GATT, so they already know what we're talking about. They know what happens when you do these big, massive trade agreement deals. People in the economic community know what happens when you join massive economic communities. Is you're basically putting all your eggs in one basket, okay? Now, everybody knows that putting all your eggs in one basket is an incredibly stupid idea. Because if you stumble in any way, shape, or form, you're going to lose the lot. And that's precisely the agenda. Tie everybody together, right? Not entirely dissimilar in a way witches are tied together and burned at the stake. That's what's going to happen to our economies under this sort of stuff. Okay? Who benefits? Not you and not me, not our countries, not our sovereignty, not our personal liberties, not our economies of any kind. It's not possible. It's not their real intention for this. If the intention was to do any good, the agreements would not be secret from the public. People would be able to look and say, ooh, I don't like that little bit there. Maybe we can actually do something about it. But no, doesn't work that way. And the last aspect I wanted to explain is social, okay? New World Order wants you to not be social, wants you to not hang out with other truthers, wants you to feel alone, wants you to withdraw into yourself, wants you to lose your mind and start becoming drug dependent and everything like that. Well, look at it this way. What's the normal aspect of a normal person's life? We've got the Greek calling in now. I'll come to you in a sec, mate. You know how you go out before you became a truther? And you used to go out drinking on Friday nights with mates or something like that. You go around to their house, maybe you watch a movie or something like that. Hey, still do that, all right? Except go around to a truther mate's house. Instead of watching some mindless movie, watch a documentary together. So it's the same methodology. go and have dinner with the Truth or Fred. In fact, I have Tiff and Dan, two listeners who came around to my house the other week, have invited me and my girlfriend Sarah around for dinner tonight. Okay, and we're going to go around, we're going to have a nice chat and be friendly and all of that sort of stuff. That's what you're supposed to do, man. Okay? Don't stay alone. It's a bad idea. Or at least I think so anyway. You know, everybody's really cool in the Truth Movement. Well, not everybody. There's plenty of cool people in the Truth Movement, let me rephrase. And by all means, if you're tired of hanging around with slaves, talking about stuff that doesn't matter, find yourself a truther mate. Email me if there's a truther that I know in your particular area or your particular state or whatever. The Vinny Eastwood Show social network, I'm going to be launching this goodness knows when. I just want people to send me emails with their current location and maybe what their interests are or anything like that. And what I'll do is I'll send you the email addresses of people in your area, not so you can just chat with them on Facebook, but so you can actually meet them. You can actually talk with them. Okay? That is the most important thing that you need to realize in life, is that you are not alone in this. Okay? I'm 10,000 miles away. I can't be there with you at all times. All of you listeners, on the other hand, you can be there for each other. You really can. And I'll be there for anybody who needs me. All right, the Greek. Welcome to the show, mate. You're on the air.
Hey, greetings, Vinny. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's good, man. We've got you here for a good 2 hours. And it was funny. I was explaining to my friend Jono last night, Greek, about you. And he said, well, who's he? And I say, well, imagine that you were put here by an alien civilization, and your task as a trusted science laboratory researcher for the civilization is to explore, research every single aspect of this planet and the universe from the human condition's perspective as a subjective sort of experiment. And you need to know everything about atomic structure, about how plants really work, how the body really works, how the universe truly rotates, and everything like that. If you know everything from the micro out to the macro, that's basically the knowledge base that the Greek has. And every single time he's called into the show, I have learned something radically new that has changed my perspective on everything.
Wow.
I think that's about as good. That's about as good as a intro as I can probably give to you, mate.
Oh, man, I might as well hang up because I don't know if I can live up to that now.
Too late.
Well, let's start off by calling you Dr. Vinny Eastwood, because laughter is absolutely the best medicine, and you do prescribe it often.
Yeah, I do. And I'm wondering if there's going to be any overdoses of Vinny Eastwood show laughter, and somebody will have a bad reaction and go shoot up a school or something, like a Prozac reaction.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe me calling in is a side effect.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I mean, was it voluntary? Okay, okay. Well, let's start off with the normal question that we asked all the guests. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Oh, gosh, oh, golly, you gave a pretty good explanation there. I like to take the position that I'm just visiting here and trying to be objective. And a little referral to that movie K-Pax, Your Produce is Not So Great Anymore.
Yeah. I don't think it is.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It is possible, but to get good produce here. But pretty much what I do is I'm observing, and I'm trying to basically gather enough information and compare it with people's belief systems, what they say is true, what they actually do versus what they say. And basically, how the inhabitants of the earth are interacting with their environment and each other, and trying to form a body of work that would distill basically the current state, like, of the situation, so it can be easily, described, and outlined to someone who wanted to know more about what's going on here, which actually happens to be the inhabitants themselves in some cases, and you call it the Truther Movement. So hopefully in that case, I believe that in many aspects of what we look to explain as what is the truth, a lot of people go into long-winded discussions and very, very narrow and deep topics, but I believe it is possible to form a very general outline, let's say with bullet points and marks that one can go into depth later, and it covers the entire field of existence on this planet.
Now, to thinking about this, because that's one of the main aspects that you talk about when you talk about mainline massive philosophical discussion. What's the meaning of it all? Have you come up with a working hypothesis for what the meaning of life is?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, you have to define life, and it's very difficult to define it using the conventional bodies of knowledge that people usually subscribe to, science and religion and philosophy, because the mainstream teaches that we live in a dead universe. We're nothing more than chemical substances, products of explosions and random effects. But as we look a little closer...
We're coming to break, unfortunately, so we'll come back to you just in a few minutes. The Greek is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back in just a few minutes after the break. You can join us in the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and also check out the other stuff at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Lots of info there. Back in a minute. Welcome back.
All right. We're
jamming. Jamming like it was a thing of the past. Grinding on through the universe at breakneck speed, transmitting out to the distant star clusters of the scumbaggery universe. And my very special guest, the Greek, is trying to explain to us what his working hypothesis is for the meaning of life. The Greek, welcome back.
Hey, man, thanks. Yeah, as you were asking me the meaning of life, well, there's several meanings to it. Depends on your level of observation. And again, we were saying that they do teach everything's pretty much a dead substance that somehow has coalesced into something living. So if from using that as a foundation or a basis to explain the meaning of life, let me just digress for 1 second. When Sarah Vaughan, a great jazz musician, was asked what makes a great jazz musician, and she says, it's the audience. So the truth in one aspect, based on who your audience is, will be shunned and laughed at, and sometimes they'll even want to kill you for saying it. Other audience will be indifferent. Another audience will be pretty susceptible to the information, and not only just listening to it, but actually doing a little bit of homework and applying it practically and proving it out for themselves. So I just wanted to make that a caveat, you know, based on what I'd like to say about it. What is the meaning of life? Well, I want to just tell you what I found out in terms of the summary. If you look from a secular point of view, secular meaning scientific, mathematical, cultural, philosophical, even religious, yes, because religion is secular. Most religions have nothing to do with the divine writings that they supposedly are subscribing to. You will see there's been so much misery, strife through the ages that the purpose of actually being here at this particular stage that we're in is to taste it. There is absolutely nothing to learn from this experience. And I know I might catch some flack from this, but there is nothing to learn. There's nothing any more to learn than if you've never had an apple before in your life and you didn't know what it tasted like and you tasted it, now you know what an apple tastes like. What did you learn from that? Well, you learn that it does have taste and it's a particular flavor that you can identify with an apple. And that is the meaning of life at this point, where we are right now. And I can gather this based on roughly 6,000 years of recorded history.
Well, that's a good pool of evidence. As opposed to mainstream science, which has a pool of evidence of, like, what? a couple of dudes who invented some stuff and told everybody else what everything's about, and everybody else believed them because they were too stupid to disprove them.
Well, you mean in terms of the age of the universe and matter and planets and things like that?
Well, you know, I was more thinking about modern science and how basically, if you have a look really deep into any scientific principle or mainline theory that everybody just kind of takes as an axiom and uses that as their scientific basis for their whole career and everything like that, like the Big Bang Theory. Like, here's my summary of the Big Bang Theory. I thought it was quite interesting. Nothing exploded, and then suddenly there was everything. That's the Big Bang Theory. Right, nothing was there, and then nothing exploded.
Yeah, who was it, Mark Twain, who said that to say that everything it came from a random explosion is the same as saying that Webster's Dictionary is a result of an explosion in a printing factory?
Yeah. You see, it doesn't make any sense, because if we were talking about micro and macro, and I find that everything on a micro scale is exactly the same, like modeled on everything in the macro scale. Like, I think they took a picture of the universe, and it kind of like was a sort of a cluster in the middle with sort of streamers sort of coming off of it. And then they took a picture of a human brain cell, and it's a cluster in the middle with streamers coming out of it. So it's like the whole universe is just one other organism's, just one giant brain cell that we can only perceive. And it's all inside us, and it's all outside us at the same time. Like, there's... like everything's built upon each other. There's nothing that's disconnected.
Yes, exactly. It's all connected, and there's many levels to it. For example, when you look at all the divine texts of the world, the major ones would be the Quran, what they call the Bible, and say the Mahabharata or the Bhagavad Gita, which would be the Hindu text. If you look at these storylines in there, and I mean the correct translation and interpretation, you'll see they are all in agreement. But the actual religions that subscribe to these texts are not in agreement. And when you approach any of their leaders, they'll say, well, you know, we don't go by the text, we go by tradition. It's the same thing with a scientist. I noticed on the chat, you know, how you pointed out how they explain that nothing exploded and turned into... You see how ridiculous they are. But if you question... the methodology, they'll say, well, who are you? Where's your degree? Where's your PhD? You see, they could never directly address the information.
You know what I'd do? I'd tell them that my degree came out of nothing.
Yes, that's a good one. But you see, the one way to get people's molecules rearranged, let's say, is to just, I kind of do this sometimes. You always have to wonder what kind of shock value someone can handle. But those that can handle, let's say, a medium shock value, I ask them, do you know what the most degrading thing you can do to anyone is, especially a child? And they say, well, no, what's that? It's to grade them.
Yeah, well, what is it? You see? To grade them and degrade them is the same thing, okay? It's just different. It's just different wordplay.
Yeah, what it does is it paralyzes your ability to rationally think, and rational thinking is a whole other topic almost, but you go into a learning environment and they present to you that you will be graded based on your responses, based on how well you respond. And now that's paralyzed your ability to rationally think, and now you are operating, your incentive is operating under the threat of penalty.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So now you're operating under the threat of penalty instead of being inspired by doing the right thing. So you've triggered, you know, how many children are growing up in a household, I can imagine, that say, Mommy, Daddy, why do I have to go do this? Because if you don't do that, you're going to go to jail. Or if you don't do this, you won't be able to get a job. But they could never address the subject matter directly. And now we have a society, I'm using the corporate we, that you have a society on the planet right now that is motivated by penalty, which has actually disabled certain functions that allow it to, for example, exercise critical thinking and develop it like a muscle, exercise objectivity, exercise a healthy emotional expression, and you force them to go into a state of armoring. you know, an armored emotion where things are kept back because of fear of penalty. You see, so the school, what they call the school system, the education system, and this is really funny, when you look at all departments of education, you know, on the surface of all the countries, they're not formally known as a Department of Education. They're always known as a Department of Public Instruction. So you will do what we say, what else, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
So doing anything else is verboten.
Yeah, it's outside. There's an old saying when I think it was the Bolsheviks in Russia, when they would have their meetings and they said, everyone, once we install this new form of government, everyone will enjoy beef for dinner and strawberries for dessert every night. And it sounded great to most of the people. Someone in the back raised their hands and says, what if I want to eat beef and have strawberries for dessert? It says, you will do what we tell you to do. You see?
Mm.
So it's very interesting.
The whole point of life is to not tell other people how to live theirs. It's to allow them to live it the way that they want, kind of thing. And it's like everybody benefits when everybody's getting exactly what they want. You know, it's called a reciprocal relationship with the universe. I think that's basically what it's supposed to be. I mean, no star wanders around solar systems knocking out planets because he's jealous of their curvature or anything, does he? And yet,
yeah,
all the time.
Yeah. If you look at the scientific model, if you want to just look at that real quick, you know, they show you a solar system with a thermonuclear sun in the middle and all the planets going around in neat elliptical orbits. That is the same thing as saying the Earth is flat. It just does not happen because this is a universe of scale, not of these discrete phenomenon. I mean, have you ever seen anything orbiting anything else? Actually, like in your home or outside, or talk to anyone that's seen anything orbiting? It just doesn't happen.
Occasionally, I have a cat orbiting me.
Right, it doesn't last very long in its temporary position. So, you know, as we look at it, everything is a universe of scale. I was on another show on American Freedom Radio giving more in-depth explanations. For example, if you take, let's say, an atom, the smallest form of material that we can handle, of hydrogen or carbon or iron or whatever, and you made it the size of the sun or the size of a planet, is it still, let's say, a hydrogen atom or is it a planet now? And if you take a planet and shrink it down to the size of an atom, is it still a planet or is it an atom? So the way we discern things is by its scale, its size, and where it is in the state of equilibrium.
It's because we want to define things. We want to put things into boxes, categories, because that's the way we can make sense of them. And what's interesting, though, is the more boxes and categories we try to arbitrarily put into things, it actually limits our understanding because we're not actually in that box with it, really looking at it, really feeling it, really understanding it. We're simply putting it on a shelf somewhere and ignoring it and saying, that's in that shelf, cool.
Yes, it is. But the thing is, if one were to address the problem with the inhabitants on the Earth right now, would be something that would appeal to their direct intelligence. And what I mean by that is also that everyone on this planet has the same intelligence. The difference is their ability to perceive. In other words, you can put 7 billion TV sets somewhere. It's the ones that have the aerial antennas or hooked up to the cable, let's say, that are going to get the best reception. But if you hook them all up, allowed them to for you know, the flow. In other words, if they were properly connected, they would all operate almost the same way. So this whole idea of intelligence is flawed. But we all have the same intelligence. In other words, if you go out and buy a computer that has a certain specification, if there's another million of those computers with specific memory, let's say, they will all operate pretty much the same. The ability is it connected? Is it able to process the information? And do you have a operating system downloaded? In other words, when you buy the machine and you, the computer that is, and connect it, the initial prompting on the screen is, well, before we perform any of these functions as advertised, you need to download the operating system. And just to go out on a limb, the purpose of all of these divine scriptures of every culture in the world is that operating system. These are set aspects of law, aspects of history, aspects of science. And when I say law, I don't mean traffic law. I mean how to be a steward. on this planet. And as they see, you know,
this triggers a thought, a remembrance in my mind of Sumerian culture, and it was essentially like almost like the Big Bang. First, there was nothing, and then all of a sudden, there was this really sophisticated culture with law, mathematics, architecture, and philosophy, and all of this other stuff. And it's like, where the heck did it come from?
Well, you have to look at, well, again, remember we said it's a universe of skill. That culture on a global level is very much like the culture today. People had free access to travel. You'll find that people got around quite well throughout the entire planet back then, and you will find there's a couple of really good archaeologists out there that do crypto-archaeology, and they'll show that from that culture that you just mentioned, the Sumerian culture, you'll find artifacts that they have all over the entire planet, dating from that golden age, let's say, that you, I think, alluding to, all over the planet. Then it's just not disclosed. And the same thing with the Greeks, the same thing with the Romans. They were everywhere. It's just history's changed. I mean, look at how history's changed just in the past 10 years. Now, you know, give it a few thousand.
I did this. I mean, if you wanted to prove to people in, let's say, 10,000 years' time that you were here, right now, you'd have to go through a heck of a lot of effort to even build something that would even last that long. Okay, let alone be able to be visible still, let alone actually be recognizable as something that was man-made, right? At the moment, there's pyramids all over the world. They don't look like pyramids. They've been eroded and what have you, and people don't even recognize them as pyramids. They just think they're big hills or whatever. And then you take a look at them from aerial shots, and it's like, oh my God, that 900-foot hill comes down on all four sides in perfect angles, and it's covered with bush and trees and all this sort of stuff, and it's like in the middle of Yugoslavia or something. Oh my God, that's a giant pyramid. Somebody left that here. And not to mention, they're all over the place. So think about this. If culture and that download, as you were talking about, had the capacity, would it even be able to be downloaded today from that technology being left behind? I'm thinking of just an interesting question, and we'll come back to that after the break. And we'll also bring you up on through Skype the Greek, so if you just hang on the line there. And also we have a caller coming in, Cecilia from Montana, and we will be getting to you just after the break in a few minutes. Join us in the chat room, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Back in a sec. Show that's all about shining bright, sending out these light ray thingies all the way through the universe. We've got our caller, Cecilia in Montana. I'll come to you in just a second. I said something over the break that I think was quite a good analogy, and wanted to repeat. I love repeating my own analogies. It's like, let's say, for example, you're an enlightened individual. Okay, I'm not claiming that I am. I'm not claiming that anybody else is, or whatever. So it's all up to your perspective. Oh, he's enlightened. He knows what he's talking about. Doesn't matter. Okay, if you want to spread knowledge, okay, let's say I'm broadcasting from this radio station right here, okay, and you're listening to this. Think about this. I'm a sun, okay? I'm the center of my own solar system, and I shine in every direction, okay? The vast majority of my light that goes out will fall upon nothingness, okay? In other words, deaf ears, empty space, okay? Because space is cold. It's 240 below zero or something like that, as the Greek tells me. And the only time when that light or information is of any use to anything is when it hits a planet, i.e. you, your mind, or whatever. And only the planets are capable of turning that light into heat and energy and actually sustain life. So if I give you information, light, and you receive it, the energy, the heat, and everything like that, you can then use it, right? But if I was not shining, there would be no possibility of anybody, even a small amount of planetoids within my light radius would ever benefit from it whatsoever. And so that's what each and every single one of us is, I think, is our own little sun, beaming out the light and the enlightenment to other people, trying to, you know, keep them thinking and stay alive in the head and in the heart, that kind of thing. At least that's how I look at it anyway. I could be wrong. So we've got our caller now. I want to go to her, Cecilia in Montana. You're on the air.
Hello, Vinny. Great to talk to you, man. This is great that you're like 10,000 miles away, and here I am way over here talking to you. It's like your sunshine is reaching 10,000 miles. And remember that star could be seen from light years away. It doesn't have to be that close, right? And then someone looking up at that light, that beach from light years away. It's a great conversation. I really, that's why I called up. I was thinking about, like, what you're talking, the other guest you have there was talking about the atom, you know, like the sun being an atom, and, you know, and the atom looks like the solar system when you look at it under a microscope. And there's a, out in the middle of the desert in Peru, there's a 6-mile by 4-mile spider that's made with rocks, right? Only could be seen from like 1,000 feet up in the air. And the one leg on the spider is a little bit longer that it uses in copulation with a female spider. But the only way that you know, that you can know that that long leg is used in copulation of that spider is under a microscope in a cave. And this spider is very, very rare. It only lives in caves deep under the ground. And to see this spider copulate, you gotta look under a microscope to observe that one little longer leg on the right side in the same spot on the same spider that's 6 miles big and 4 miles wide, and you got to see it from 1,000 feet up, just like if you was in a big giant microscope looking down. And this thing is something like 4,000 years old.
Well, it is like that, and that's not the only site that implies incredibly advanced tech.
I think civilization took a long turn. I think we turned away from Earth. We think that we could create our own existence. We forgot the knowledge of nature. Just imagine the world we could have if civilization joined with nature. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people across the earth now that realizes this, you know, and this is the big tug of war, I think. You know, the capitalists want to keep, you know, everything working the way it is so they can make their money. But the real true capitalists that want to work with the earth and the technology together and make it work good for the people and forget about the profit of the capitalistic idea with the true capitalistic idea to get civilization and nature working together, we could do unthinkable things like reaching them stars that shine. And hearing when you guys talk, and ripples everywhere, and the ripples hit me, and I love the show, man, and I just wanted to call in and say hello.
Well, you're very welcome, Cecilia. Thank you for your call, man. And I also wanted to ask you something as well.
I wanted to comment on the aspect of that first question. What's life's all about? You know, we live in this reality of the duality, and that brings choice. We can't avoid it. That's the free will. And we got the choice to make the hate or the love. And I think we're created to make that choice and create. And I say choose well and create love. That's what we're here for, because this world tries to kill our love, tries to kill the love between human and earth. You know, this civilization that took the wrong turn, trying to kill our love for the earth and civilization. And we got to make the choice and keep the love alive. And that's why we are here. So keep the love alive. Life is short. Choose well and choose love, man. You know, bring it alive. Love alive, like the harp song, you know.
Yeah, well, think about this. You made an interesting point there about our reality is duality. And I find whenever you're basically, if you've got the right idea about something, you go through, you accomplish it, and it gets finished. But if you've got the wrong idea about something, you have to keep repeating it. So reality of duality, I translate that as reduality, because that's what we're doing most of the time in our society, isn't it? We're redoing things that have already been done, that have already failed.
We're just hoping it'll
work this time. And I think that what's happening here is that we were talking about these ancient technologies, ancient civilizations, and what have you. Maybe they got it all figured out, and they're all living in maybe peace and harmony or whatever. This is just my theory. I don't have any evidence to support it, maybe. But let's say they had it all figured out, and some psychopathic scumbaggery control freak, manipulative evil council, not entirely dissimilar to the type we've got today with the Bilderberg groups and Council on Foreign Relations and the Vatican and the City of London and Washington, D.C. and Barack Obama and all these kind of eclectic filth kind of get together. And they're like, you know what? Everybody's peaceful, loving, happy. It means we don't have any control over them because they've managed to maintain control of themselves. They're actually capable of existing, and they don't need us. That really ticks me off. Let's mess everything up and start over from scratch. Let's redo it, okay? And this time, instead of everybody being peaceful, happy, enlightened, and getting along sweet as and all as a nut, with us having no extra power over them, we want everybody to be fighting each other all day long, every day of every century, and I want all of the power that would normally be given to them through their sheer love and competence to be given and usurped to us. That's what I think happened. Okay, well, might be. Sounds like the thinking of a psychopath to me. Greg, any thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I've got a couple of thoughts. First of all, the caller's spot on the type of thinking that I'm trying to impart here. You see, the other thought on that is, yeah, you're pretty close to it, but the picture, remember, it works on both sides. In other words, let's just say we're in a vicious circle right now. That is one state, one way to look at it, that anything you try to do actually just feeds that same direction. And until that circle is broken, there is no advancement. And the circle will be broken, and there will be advancement, and it's coming in the next two decades, let's say. But again, the caller, I want to commend him on his perspective. That was really good.
Okay, well, we're coming to a break now. Have you got anything, any final words of wisdom or shout-outs that you want to give there, Cecilia?
Are you to me? Hello?
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, I just want to say it's a great show. I'm glad I found you, and thanks for letting me speak.
I'm glad you found us too, mate. And this is another thing. This is the reason why the Vinnie Eastwood social network, I think, is going to be really awesome, because everybody who finds this show really loves it, because they're like me. They're real cool. They like to have a good time. They're not freaking stupid. and they're not a douchebag that's going to screw you over or lie to you for personal gain. If anything, your friends in the truth movement, or at least my friends in the truth movement, sacrifice almost as much for me as I do for them. And that's, I think, the way we should all really be living, running our businesses, running our lives, and running our families. You've got to sacrifice for each other, because you find out that if it's all for one and one for all, that bundle of sticks that would snap individually is unbreakable. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. The Greek is my guest. Call in number 218-339-8525. Back in a tick. Number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And if you can't remember the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, just remember Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like Clint, the guy who got shot while he was wearing some kind of a boiler thing around his chest and a fistful of dollars, and he actually wasn't shot. Okay? Vinnie Eastwood. Vinnie with a Y, with an Eastwood, like Clint Eastwood. Pretty straightforward. Google that, Shia like Muslim, and you'll find the website. Pretty easy. All right. So, my very special guest today is probably one of the most enlightened, intelligent people that I've ever had call into this show. And that includes the long list of incredible guests that we've had as well. The Greek. And as expected, phone lines are lighting up. So we're going to go to the first one here. He's been holding on for about 6 minutes. Freema, are you there?
How's it going, Benny?
Somewhat fabulous.
Yeah? Loving your show, man. Listen to you every day.
Every day? Mate.
Every day. Every day, and I'm getting a little upset with all the repeats, but that's cool, I guess. I have to agree with you on your guest, man. I listened to him the other night on Santos, and I was really impressed. I have a question for the Greek here. Do you think that there's any validity to the fact that some of these kids these days, and maybe us also, when we were in public schools, not soaking up so much of this information because for some reason that we know that it's incorrect?
Oh yeah, you definitely know, because this thing we call consciousness is something streaming in. It's not only captured by us and processed by us, but it's constantly streaming in.
Yeah, I kind of felt that way. Some of us felt like we were kind of retarded in school, and as we got older,
That's funny. I felt like I was retarded in school, but after I got out of school, I realized it was everybody else that was retarded.
Yeah, it's great. Hey, Ben, it wasn't until later on in life when I got into the hiring and firing positions in the high-tech industry and stuff where I realized that you had, kind of a 1-to-20 ratio for people that were likely to end up getting it eventually. What do you say to that?
That's really, really high. I think it would be like maybe 1 out of 200. I think that's really, really small. Really, really, really small. But it's growing just like anything else. Again, it's a streaming that's coming in. We're receiving it. But there's the thing is your antenna in the right position? which is, I don't want to say right position because there is no real, you can't explain it temporally, but just to say what they're doing in the schools, again, to be a harsh critic of it, is they're getting you used to being manipulated. And just like any addict, you always want to get your fix. So now they have a culture of people on the planet that are addicted to being manipulated. So they're looking for manipulation.
It's more specific than that. The CIA have done a lot of tests on mind control under MK Ultra, and they found out that mind control is addictive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And mind control being, let's say, a form of manipulation with impulses, like we were talking about earlier. You suspend one part of the mind and make another part of the mind more receptive.
See, my perspective on high school, at the very least, was that it is, in fact, not entirely dissimilar from MKUltra, in which it is a trauma-based mind control program to produce agents for the system.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I got one going into high school this after the summer here, and it was my other kids had to re-educate it when they got home from the school every day. It seemed like, and at least with my kids, they're getting a different perspective. And I worked for the school district out here in California for a couple of years before I actually had to quit. Couldn't see myself spending another 20 years in that system, man. I'm telling you. You actually working in the maintenance, you know, facilities area, you're always in different rooms and stuff, and you end up hearing some of the shit these teachers are telling these kids, and the way they try to feed them propaganda and manipulate their thought processes, just to crack up, especially to someone who's listening, you know, from the outside.
Yeah. Well, see, this is something that has occurred to me recently, and every single time I say it to other truthers, they go, yes, yes, oh my God, that's a brilliant idea. A truth of high school, okay? You send your kids there, your history teacher teaches real history. Your science teacher teaches real science. Your biology teacher teaches real biology. That kind of stuff.
We need the Greek teaching here, from what I can see.
Well, here's the dig, okay? What difference does it make if you're in a lecture theater with 300 other people and you've got one lecturer in the front of you in university, whereas you could have 100 people on a Skype call from home with the Greek talking to you as an audience? What's the difference? The difference is it doesn't cost you a $10,000 a year, okay? And you actually get knowledge that's of some benefit. And you don't have to leave your home. I mean, the truth of school, if we were to create it, and I think we're working on a few things in the background with a few other of my mates and everything like that in order to get this off the ground, but if we were to do it, it would have to be a completely and utterly digital online school, okay? So if your kids were to come to the school, and it would probably have to be teenagers and what have you to teach the sort of sophisticated information we've got, they'd have to be doing it as a homeschool program. But then again, the state mandates particular curriculums and things of that nature, so it'd be interesting to find out the inner workings of it and whether or not such a school educating children about the truth as opposed to brainwashing them to be slaves for the state would be illegal, wouldn't it? Because anything that's good gets made illegal. Or at least that's my perspective anyway. We're going to get to our next caller now. Freeman, do you have any final comments or words or shout-outs?
No, man, I'm going to drop you an email when you get the social network going.
Yeah. Well, see, everybody's just going onto a list. And so once that list gets kind of a big packer or whatever, and I've got a whole bunch of people from different cities, I'm going to read out that list of cities on air and ask people within those cities that do listen to the show to quickly email me, and I'll forward their emails on to the other people on the social network, so that way you can actually meet up kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe we can get together out here and make some truth or music.
Yeah, man. And now with the internet, we don't have to travel everywhere to make music, do we?
Not at all. All right, man. You have a good weekend.
Thanks for your call, brother. All right. Next caller now. It's a new caller. Area code 450. We were just going to grab your first name. And what state are you calling from? Caller, you're on.
Okay, yep. This is Johnny from Montreal, Canada.
All right. Welcome, Johnny.
Cool. My French accent will come out, so I apologize. But
just as long as you don't reveal your croissant.
No, it's not that bad. I'm not from Paris. I'm just calling about something you touched on yesterday, which is it would be a good thing to take a break from all those magnificent truther shows, because it could get you down. Because I'm telling you, if you saw my Facebook page, it's that's the only thing I do. I mean, is I give out information that's been given to me, which I double check and triple check. It could be through you, through Alex Jones, to Jack Blood, or whatever. And I'm kind of, I don't know, hooked on it and demoralized also, because I'm, I'm 28 years old. I'm an eligible bachelor, and I don't like even feel like getting a new girlfriend or going back to the gym. I'm not doing a hunger strike or whatever to not to intake what Bill Gates wants to give to me to eat. But then again, I guess taking a break would be a good thing. So that's what I wanted to call about and get your take on it.
Well, let me ask you something. Any job you've ever had, it's work, isn't it? Okay? You're sitting there, you're doing something. Regardless of whether it's pushing papers, marking a kid's or grading children at school, as the Greek would like to say, or anything of that nature, it's still a job. Okay? Being a truther, being a patriot is a job, but unlike normal employment, there is duty that forced you into that job. Okay? You had the realization that, oh my God, there's scumbaggery everywhere, and nobody else is going to solve this problem for me. I have to solve it, right? Now, that's a lot of personal responsibility to take on your shoulders for something that ain't your fault. You and I didn't set up this system, did we, Johnny?
No.
And you and I alone are not going to be able to overthrow this system. And so what it is, I feel, is a balance, okay? Anytime you go to work, you take a weekend off. But if your work is being a truther, your work is at home, and on the weekends, you're still working, aren't you? So you don't have a chance to give your brain time to rest or your heart time to slow down and things like that. Balance, I believe, is the ability to go from either extreme and then come back to the center again. So you can be extremely into the truth movement and then go offline for a week or two and have some time off, meet your family, have dinner and watch some movies or anything you want to do to relax and recharge your batteries. And then you come back and you realize that you're far more energized, far more capable of doing even more work because you took care of yourself, right? Because we understand that there's a time pressure here, that the New World Order's got a timeline. We feel that, oh my God, we have to do everything now. But they're working with a massive apparatus. They got lots of people who work in shifts. They sleep and stuff like that. If we subtract our sleep in order to try and compete with somebody who is, then we're going to burn out faster than they will, won't we? So we have to learn how to take care of ourselves. Otherwise, if you can't take care of yourself, how on earth are you going to protect anybody else?
True, but how can... I mean, do you actually have hope that we're going to see 2013 or 2014, or are we going to be... Is nuclear reactor number 4 going to melt down totally, and we're going to... North America is going to be uninhabitable?
Well, I look at it this way. You can only deal with the reality in front of you, and you can only make decisions based upon the exact reality in front of you that you were forced to deal with. Like, those are the only times where you can actually do it. Like, let's say, for instance, somebody tells you 10 years ago that in 10 years' time you're going to be hit by a car. Now, does that mean you worry about being hit by a car for a whole 10 years? Or does that mean that you are perfectly fine and happy for 9.5 years, and then about half year leading into it, you kind of think, I'm going to be a little bit more cautious around cars, I think. Right? So you put yourself under undue stress by reacting to things that aren't actually right there in front of you. Like the Fukushima radiation thing, it's an invisible menace. And it's on top of everybody right now. So that means that there are currently probably radioactive iodine particles in my thyroid glands, in yours, and it's slowly sitting there causing cancer. So that's a very real reality. So we can react to that. How do you react to detox your body from radiation? Well, one of the most efficient substances is marijuana. Marijuana is an incredible detoxifier for radiation. In fact, to the point where you can plant entire hemp fields on radioactive soil, and they will absorb the radioactivity into the plant matter. Okay, and
but you're not talking about smoking it. You're not talking about smoking some joints. Like, you're talking about hemp oil.
Yeah, well, no, hemp oil, smoking joints, all of that kind of stuff, it all works well on a biochemical level. It does the same thing, because the human body is essentially an upside down plant. Your brain is where the roots of that plant are. And when you, let's say you take that analogy of the hemp plant that has its roots in the soil and it detoxifies, takes all the radiation out, your brain is up here. And the hemp will take, all those toxins out of that root system. And on top of that, there is... Do you like Indian food, curry?
Sorry?
On occasions? Do you like it to eat Indian food on occasions, like nice curries? No?
No.
All right. Well, anyway, for those who do, who are you listening, there's an interesting herb called turmeric. It's a very, very common spice that's used in curries all over the place. Very good for getting rid of radiation. If you like...
curry, like that kind of yellowish powder?
Oh, yeah. So it's really good, and also turmeric is very good for any wounds you might have, muscle bruisings, things like that. Mix it with a little bit of water, turn it into a paste, and then if you've got like a sprained ankle or something like that, rub it on and put a bandage over it, and your foot will be healed probably by morning. And it does the same thing to your body, detoxifies it from radiation, and it also gives you it gives you the ability to manufacture more endorphins, you know, that kind of love drug that makes you feel happy within your body. There's also rosemary. Rosemary is really good for getting rid of radiation. Ginger and garlic and ginkgo leaf. Ginkgo leaf is very interesting. There's only one type of plant that now grows near Chernobyl, the ginkgo tree. Everything else died. Isn't that interesting? And this stuff can detoxify the heck out of you. So there's a reality, and there's some simple solutions, and those solutions are all around you. But if you worry about the reality that you have to deal with, instead of looking at the solutions to those problems, the problem seems much bigger than they actually are. Getting rid of radiation and not dying is a lot easier than one would think, and a lot less stressful than we make it. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back after the break at VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yeah! Times are changing. It's funny that, because it's the only constant in the universe. We were talking over the break about memory. And the Greek's got a memory problem. He remembers everything. it's photographic, okay? It's all in real, vivid, living quality and all of that sort of stuff. And most people are either, A1, out of focus, and so whatever they do remember, it's kind of blurry and fuzzy, or the aperture is not open enough and they cannot see at all. Just think about that for a moment, ladies and gentlemen, about capturing what you see and just how important it might wind up being. Trust me, little bits of information here and there can be very, very, very interesting. And if you actually, instead of just listen to it and think about it and digest it and swallow it and actually use that information, go out and make something happen with it, you're unstoppable. There's a lot of knowledge out there, a lot of knowledge. A lot of it's very useful, some of it not so useful, like knowledge of the who's the Republican candidates and what have you. That's not useful information. That's a waste of time. Joe in L.A. calling in. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going, brother?
Real nice.
Nice. Hey, is the last caller still on there, or is he off?
Oh, he's still in.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Hey, how you doing, bro? Yeah, hey. I was listening to your comment, about losing hope and stuff like that. But don't lose hope, man, because my hope, like I've told Vinny before, comes from people like yourself and people like Vinny who take the time to spread the information that's vital, you know, for humanity and for our friends and family. I have a girlfriend for about 2 years. We're going to celebrate our 2 year anniversary. She's a non-truther. She doesn't really like to talk about a lot of stuff that I talk to her about because it kind of depressing to her. But I would suggest, you know, just have fun whenever you can. Take some time away from the movement. Go out and date lots of girls. And in the meanwhile, you know, you still do what you do, and with your Facebook friends, I'm the same way. I, you know, most of my postings are all about truth. I've taken about 2 months off of Facebook and don't want to overwhelm my friends, but at the same time, I'm reinvigorated. I'm going to go back on there, and in 2 months worth of stuff that's been on the news, I'm sure some of the people that have been warning now are going to be probably listening a little bit more since they see stuff on the news that's happening with the drones and with the fondling of the women and children in American airports. So just hang in there, bro, and don't lose hope, man, because I could tell you 15 years ago, the movement was not even a fraction of what it is today. I meet people on the streets, and it's just amazing. Sometimes they already know what's going on, and I think we've already hit the 100th monkey, and we're about to... So the New World Order, they're scared. They know that we're on to them, and they're trying to figure out what their next move is going to be. But keep spreading the word, man, and have fun as much as you can and try to enjoy life as much as possible.
Well, that's sage advice, and I follow that advice to the letter. Every day I'm constantly attempting to amuse myself. I mean, why do you think I deliver so many lame puns on this show? Because they amuse me. They may really tick people off that are listening in and what have you, but it amuses me, so I do it. And I'm acting under the assumption, though, that it's the older people in the truth movement. You're talking about how the truth movement 10, 15 years ago used to be a fraction. Well, imagine somebody like, let's say, who am I looking at on my desktop here? G. Edward Griffin. I've got a picture of G. Edward Griffin there. And he'd been in the movement for, like, what, 60 years? Something like that? Plus? And,
yeah.
And been doing all this hard out work, exposing scumbaggery, like, to the ninth degree, and the Quigley formula, and the creature from Jekyll Island. And I asked him, you know, what's kind of going on with this thing here? How can you see us coming through? I mean, I'm young, I'm energetic, I want to see everything happen now. And he says, well, you know, when I was young and energetic and I wanted to see happen now, I realized something very important, that the world doesn't move as fast as I want it to, but it does move. What you got to do is, instead of looking for exactly what you want to see, you look for the signs of what you want to see coming about, right? So if you want to have a look and be hopeful about the truth movements and everything like that, you need only look out your window. You need only tune in to radio. We are everywhere now.
Absolutely. The same gentleman you mentioned, he said it's taken the New World Order 100 years to put their plan in motion, at least here in the United States of America. And it's going to take a slow process of those of us who are aware to take back those seats of power by running for office, by becoming teachers, by simply just speaking to people and educating people around us. And that's what's happening. I can see it happening even inside the Ron Paul movement, regardless of what's happening this week. In a lot of states, a lot of Ron Paul people are trying to make a change. From the inside, I'm kind of losing hope as far as trying to change the establishment. I'm almost on the point of declaring myself anarchist, but, you know...
Again, look for the signs. Is there any sign that the establishment has learned its lesson and is changing itself? No.
Not really.
Okay.
Sometimes it's frustrating, man, because I'm not a violent person, but, man, sometimes it gets so frustrating. Sometimes I just want to slug a guy, you know, when I see how they treat people.
We're good people, way, you know? Just think about this instead, okay? Mm-hmm. We are the establishment now. Do you see us improving, growing, taking more control, becoming more visible, becoming stronger? Yes, in every single direction. We are taking over. We are expanding. Every single corporation out there that works for the New World Order has traitors working for them now. People who were working there quietly, happily slaving away, and some anal truther just wouldn't let it go. And they're just like, take the DVD. Take the DVD. Watch it. Okay? It's change. It'll blow your mind.
Exactly.
And the World Trade Center. You know? We're so persistent, and that's what I like about people who have truth on their side versus those who have lies on their side. Those who have lies basically have an ideology built upon sand, and it's very easy to tip those little houses over. They have to say 1,000 lies before somebody will believe it, but somebody with the truth can only say it once, and it'll bowl that house of cards full of BS right over in an instant. And this is what I find very encouraging, ultimately, is that they have to try literally 1,000 times as hard to be half as effective as all of us, because we're too many, okay? And I think that's why, ultimately, they want to get rid of us all.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think there's nothing more gratifying than seeing the look on their face, especially... when you see all the YouTube videos of activists going in and throwing a wrench into the machine on live television, on the radio, and it's hilarious because, like you said, we're in there. We have moles everywhere. We have people who are we're converting the minds even of those who consider themselves part of the establishment because they realize that their families are on the line as well. So anyways, Vinny and your guests, my break is over. I usually call during work, so I actually call during a break. So I'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Another mole in the New World Order system working away there. All right. Yeah. I love slavery. It's good. Okay. Now, we don't have any more callers at this particular moment. So one thing I wanted to ask you, Greg, I mean, people keep asking me this question, what gives you hope?
Oh, that's a really good question, and that's all I try to spread. But it's more of, it's not what they think when I try to tell them what to have hope for. And one quick way to look at it is if you look at a body of information that's been always right in the past, I mean spot on in thousands of details, you can pretty much count on it being right about what it has to say about the future. And that is the hope that I'm referring to. The problem with actually myself explaining in shorthand where that hope actually lies is difficult with most people because it's based on their concept of time, their concept of where they are, and the dominating primary forces. And I believe once before we did discuss time, but the current time, the way that people view time, is completely engineered and completely artificial. Yet a quick definition of time is nothing more than the recordation of events in terms of the way we look at it and the way we communicate. And the in the aspect of where we are in our existence, if you look at certain ancient bodies of knowledge, they're called scriptures in many part of the world. They've been 100% spot on about events that happened in the past, and they're 100% spot on of events to happen in the future. The problem is we have, like you mentioned, the out of focus. Everyone says, well, that's your interpretation. Everyone has an interpretation. But if you look at that word interpretation very carefully, it must be precise, just like an ambassador who takes an interpreter with him. You know, that interpreter must be precise. It's not an opinion or a version. It must be precise. So if we look at the ancient wisdom and what is coming upon us based on a true measurement of time, there is tremendous hope after this period. And one way to explain it is, if you want to do a two-hour movie, do you buy exactly 2 hours of film, or do you get a little extra film because you have to roll the credits in the end? We are in the credit part of this existence right now. The time ended, let me just put it secularly, I'll just get to the point. Time already ended in 1998, the fall of 1998. You are in the credits part of the movie. So you have a movie here that's several many millennia long, and the credits are going to be rolling, oh, roughly 30 to 45 years. So you could judge based on 1998 coming on. There is no such thing as 2012 or 1998 for that matter, but I'm just giving you a reference point, kind of like converting inches to meters, right? Like, you know, yeah. For example, yeah, you see the real quick, you know, they're teaching that it is a heliocentric universe, but from the Earth, it's geocentric. In other words, we see the sun going around the Earth from this perspective, and we see the stars in certain positions. We're supposed to record events with these precise instruments. You know, the day starts at noon. It doesn't start at midnight, you see. So that just changes things pretty radically, and your month starts with the moon. And not the new moon, the dark moon, but the full moon, because the full moon rises in the east just like the sun. And they're both exactly the same diameter, and they switch places according to the seasons. So when you read ancient documents, you won't find Septem or Octob or Novem or Decem. Those are prefixes for September, October, November, December. You see, because Septem means seven, Octo means eight, Novem means nine, and 12, November as 11 when it really means 9, October as 10 when it really means 8. You see, so it's all right in front of us. You know, are we going to grab it and go, or are we going to just leave it alone and let someone else deal with it?
Now, also, I find, I was talking before about how I'm kind of like my own amusement generator, right? Well, we also all have to understand that we are also our own hope generators, okay? Because you know what gives you hope? Either A1, seeing something done that gives you hope, or doing something that gives you hope, okay? Like, let's say, for example, if you never see anybody ambushing your politicians or your corrupt scumbaggery in your particular town, right? And then you go out with a camera, and you know what? I'm going to expose the scumbaggery myself. And you do it, you upload it, and not only have you given yourself hope, self-positive reinforcement, but every single person who watches that video also gets a share in that hope, okay? It's not difficult to generate it. And it goes back to that old adage, man, the only thing that is necessary for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing, okay? Trust me, ladies and gentlemen, doing nothing is real easy. Can you name me one easy road that leads to a good place? No, the good places are always at the end of very long, hard roads. And you best be understanding of that, because the journey is what strengthens you, is what builds you, is what makes you into who you are. If you want to get from point A to point B, what is there in between? Is that connection between me thinking about something and doing something the most important part Okay? The original concept doesn't matter. The action itself doesn't matter. But when you bring them together, when you think and then you act, you create something that didn't previously exist. That's what gives you hope. Creating something real via your own actions or seeing somebody else do it, and then that inspires you to do it yourself. Okay? It's real simple. And I inspire myself every day. We'll be right back after that. Ladies and gentlemen, to the most operatic 2 hours in talk radio, Symphony Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. And now, what was I talking to? Oh, yeah, yeah. Yesterday, after the show, had a Skype chat with a couple of the listeners and supporters and stuff. I think there was only, like, three of us there. But we talked for, like, over an hour and a half or something like that. And I liked it. I liked being able to actually talk to the listeners, you know, just not be on air and nobody's got any pressure. There's no FCC regulations and they can ask me just questions direct. It's just a part of a discussion. So I feel like doing that again today. So if you want to have a Skype chat with me and some of the other listeners or whatever that are in the chat room, just go to the chat room at TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com and we'll give you the Skype details and all of that stuff there. So just pop your Skype name in and I will add you, and then we'll have a convo after the show. The Greek is my very special guest and always awesome. Final segment here for final words of wisdom, the things that really give us hope, essentially. I think that's what a lot of truthers have been asking me predominantly lately. They seem to ask me all the time about what gives me hope, what encourages me, or do I see us winning or any stuff like that. And I always give a really positive response. I'm very interested to know what the Greek's response to that kind of questioning would be.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's not a simple one, but I could give you a roundabout way that'll maybe convey what one approach, let's say. First of all, most people on this planet are living in an engineered reality. What I mean by that is what they think they know doesn't even exist, but they've been sort of convinced that it does through the trickery of some sort of perception of the senses, and just they're either the level of apathy that's been instilled or just ignorance of what is really going on. Once someone is living in this engineered reality, right, and there's many, many examples that you've given through the years as well, whatever hope springs from that is quickly changed and it becomes nothing more than hearsay, rumor, or gossip, and you're on this roller coaster. You know, they promised us this, and see, it didn't come, and he promised us that, and it didn't come. So the way what real hope is, the one way that I would convey it, is to get your feet firmly planted on the ground. You know, how many times do people, you know, here, especially what they call the former U.S. of A., someone asks you, you know, or you ask them, you know, how are you? And then they say, well, I'm hanging in there. And I say, well, I like to have my feet on the ground. So it just starts with the way you think, the language that you use. The next thing is, can you start using objectivity to cut through the information you're receiving and look at the sources objectively? And then start formulating a base of knowledge based on objectivity. That would be one approach. And the other thing I would say is there are three important things, or the most important things to maintain a physical body would be food, clothing, shelter. Right? Food, clothing, shelter. So are you optimizing your food? Are you optimizing your clothing? And are you optimizing your shelter, your dwelling place? And that would be a really good place to start, and where you could actually see results. And then you will build up the hope, and then you can ask anyone, hey, how is your hope going today? You know, great, man, I found this out. Try that. Great, you see. It's not just a single thing we call hope that we could just put up a banner. And that's been done before, no pun intended. But so that's just the quick roundabout way. You see, it's food, clothing, shelter for the physical aspect, and for the mental aspect, are you being objective, or are you falling for a perceived engineered reality that just doesn't exist? And one way to explain that would be, do as I say, not as I do. Right? Like you turn on the mainstream media, everything's getting better, and you just, you know, turn off the TV, you look outside, and everyone's frowning, and things are not getting better, shops are closing, you know, people are sicker and fatter and dumber, and, you know, so which one is it?
Well, I love that. I love that phrase, do as I say, not as I do, because I remember, what was it? I was on Waiheke Island this one time, and one of my mum's friends, Gary, he gets out of the truck. And he's going in to get a video, and he tells us, don't drive drunk, boys. And then as he gets back into the truck after getting his video, he pulls a bottle of scotch out of it and takes a sip and puts it back in the truck, and he comes over to talk to us, and he says, do as I say, not as I do. It's just great. And it goes to show you that we're all individuals, right? And drugs, information, love, anger, fear, they all react to different people differently, because we're all snowflakes in a sense, aren't we, like that?
Yeah, and here's the interesting part. You see, once we acknowledge, this is on the subject of individuality, that we all are really the same. That's when the true individuality, or the discrete benefit of everyone sharing what they have, will come forth. You see, when you force the issue that we're all different, and not you, I mean, when that's taught, like, for example, they teach competition is good, but they never use the word cooperation. And when you look at the actual power base, there is no competition amongst them. They're all cooperating, but when they appear to be competing. So they never teach cooperation, they teach competition. And if you go, let's say, the finest restaurants are always in what's called a restaurant district. They're all right next to each other. They're not competing. The finest clothing you find in the garment districts, you see. So you see, they all group together. So
does that mean that this right here, like American Freedom Radio, is part of the Truth District? Right? And instead of having physical districts and outlet shops and things of that nature, we now have digital districts. And what it does is it allows people to shop for the finest information from their home, essentially. What it does is it brings the finest products within your reach.
Yeah, it allows each one to excel in what they know and what they like to do best. And they don't feel hindered, impaired, or intimidated by someone else in the same exact field right next to them who is also doing what they find they're best at doing. It's working together. It's the opposite. What is the opposite of something? It can't be nothing.
No, it can't be nothing.
It has to be something else that allows equilibrium to happen, right? Because everything is moving, and everything has a sense of opposition and attraction.
Well, that's true. So, nothing can't oppose something.
Correct.
Because nothing's nothing. It doesn't exist.
Correct. So the whole concept of the way we view things is very simple. Is if we don't know a certain process, what we're being told to do is correct or not, how long do you have to observe its reaction, whether it's beneficial or not beneficial, to say, hey, stop, we shouldn't do things that way?
Well, I think it's about, you know, how we're all searching for knowledge or whatever. I'm starting to think that it's not so much about searching for knowledge anymore. It's about accepting the realities. Like, let's say, for example, you wanted to go and accomplish something. Like, I want to go be awesome. The way to become awesome is not to go and try and be awesome. It's just to realize and accept that you already are, and you don't actually have to work that hard to be it. And that satisfaction really allows the awesomeness of Vinnie Eastwood to come on through.
Absolutely, and it's like that with everyone, Vinnie. If you have an inspiration, when I say inspiration, see, all things come from inspiration. It's a feeling. And everyone's experienced it at one point, or some experience it more or less than others.
We've got limited experience, limited time, but we've got infinite consciousness. So we've got infinite ability to explore, okay? It's kind of like wealth. You can't take it with you. It only benefits you while you're still alive. And that's what knowledge does as well. And just like wealth, you can allow other people and your descendants to inherit it. And I think that's probably a good spot to leave it, Greg. We are come to the end of the show. Thank you so much for coming on for a full 2 hours. It's been great, man.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, man. It's been a privilege to be here. Thank you.
Mm. And some people are asking, are you ever going to get a website together? Because a lot of people were starting to ask me a little bit about you as well.
Yes, I will, but not now. It's all about timing, the right information at the right time. And right now we'll just trek along like this, but you'll be one of the first to know. Thank you.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, best case scenario you can hope for, you can go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and up the very top there of the website, there'll be a little bar called Featured Interviews. And the very first time I had the Greek call in was after I interviewed George Norrie. So it's the very top interview on that Featured Interviews page is me interviewing George Norrie, and then the Greek calling in for about 40 minutes. So there's some other content there. And that's the best I can do for you. And now we're going to have another archive, and we're going to have it on YouTube. So when your website is up and running, Greg, you'll have plenty of content to put on there. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you again sometime. Enjoy your weekend.